Investigators say five people found dead in this Sampson County home were targeted. Their plea for help in this case and what we know about two other people killed in the same county that night.
This drug, originally meant to help with diabetes, has boomed in popularity for weight loss. I'll tell you why the state says it can't keep helping its patients pay for it and why one pharmacist says it could have a ripple effect.
I'm tracking record temperatures before a quick drop. The timing for this dramatic cold front and how it could impact your Halloween.
The Sampson County Sheriff's Office has launched multiple investigations after five people were shot to death inside just one home. And it's one of four crime scenes spread across that county tonight in the last 24 hours. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dan Haggerty.
And I'm Ashley Rowe. Take a look at this map showing all of the crime scenes today. A body found on Leaf Lane, the scene in Clinton where a police officer shot and killed a suspect, a shooting investigation on Casper Lane, and that grisly scene off Garland Highway. Again, that's where four men and one woman were found dead. We learned from the sheriff that these murders were the result of a targeted shooting. WRAL's Aaron Thomas is live at the scene gathering more information tonight, Aaron.
Yeah, Ashley, at this point, we are still waiting for investigators to share any possible suspect information, person of interest, and any arrest. This after those five people were found dead in this home behind me in different rooms off of Garland Highway. Let's show you some video. You can see this was an hours-long investigation. It was a man who says he knows these victims decided to come to this house. He made that grim discovery late last night, finding four men and one woman dead. Now, Sheriff Jimmy Thornton says that this appears to be a isolated sort of incident, a targeted attack, and there's no present threat to the community. With there being minimal leads at this point, they are really pushing anyone with any information to come forward.
And we hope that somebody out there who knows something will at least call us and get us the information that we need so that we can bring these people, person or persons, to justice.
And the medical examiner will determine the official cause of death for those four men and that one woman found dead in this home here. This is something we're going to be staying off for our late news. We're going to find out if those five identities will be released and if we can get in contact with any sort of family or friends who knew the five people found dead in this home. Ashley.
Aaron Thomas reporting live. Thank you.
Staying in that area less than 4 hours earlier, deputies found a man stabbed to death in a mobile home on Leaf Lane. That's near Clinton. The sheriff's office says seasonal farm workers live in this mobile home park, but they did not identify the man who died. An important note, the sheriff says that the three crime scenes in Sampson County are separate and not related. Also in Sampson County, but inside the Clinton city limits, police shot and killed a man on Dogwood Circle. Police went to the home around 1 a.m. This is after a woman said she was assaulted by a man with a gun. Officers say they found the suspect hiding in a closet, and then he pointed a gun at them. The officer shot him. They were not hurt. Clinton police have not identified the man who died. None of those officers, again, were injured in this. Now, our coverage of these multiple crime scenes in Sampson County will continue on WRAL.com. There you can find full coverage on what we know about each incident.
An intensive manhunt continues tonight for the suspect in Wednesday's shooting rampage at a bowling alley and a restaurant that left at least 18 dead and 13 injured in Lewiston, Maine. Police say 40-year-old Robert Card is facing an arrest warrant for 8 counts of murder and should be considered armed and dangerous. He's a certified firearms instructor and a member of the U.S. Army Reserves. We will be following any developments closely.
New voting maps drawn by Republican lawmakers just became law yesterday. They're designed to give Republican candidates a large advantage in the upcoming elections for Congress and the legislature. WRAL's Capitol Bureau Chief Laura Leslie reports Democrats are already saying they plan to challenge these districts in court.
And North Carolina is notorious nationwide for redistricting lawsuits, so it's likely really no surprise that this case is likely to end up in court as well. Republicans say they believe their maps are fair and they believe they will stand up to judicial scrutiny, but Democrats say they're unconstitutional.
Congresswoman Deborah Ross says Democrats are planning to file a lawsuit over the new congressional and legislative maps, claiming that they treat voters differently according to their race.
We are exploring racial gerrymandering claims right now.
In this week's hearings, Republican state lawmakers repeatedly said that they did not use racial data, only political data, to draw the new districts, which give the GOP a large political advantage. The state Supreme Court has ruled political gerrymandering is permitted, and the U.S. Supreme Court ruled it does not have authority to stop it. But because so many Democrats are black, Senate Minority Leader Dan Blue said the new districts are also racially gerrymandered, which is not legal.
They will claim that they did it for partisan reasons, but you can't discriminate on the basis of race for partisan reasons. And that's the thing that they fail to analyze.
Blue said in some areas, like Fayetteville, Republican leaders packed high numbers of black voters into Democratic districts to make surrounding districts safer for Republicans. In other areas, like Greensboro, they sliced up communities of color into Republican-leaning districts to lessen their political power. Blue said that's exactly what GOP mapmakers did a decade ago, and the federal courts threw out those maps in 2016 as racially discriminatory.
Now, they pretend that they didn't look at race in drawing these maps. But as Chief Justice Roberts said in the Alabama case, you know, race is something you look at, and legislators already know what the racial makeup is. They don't assume that they're dumb or stupid.
As Senator Blue just mentioned earlier this summer, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled to uphold the ban on racial gerrymandering in a case from Alabama. But then just a couple of weeks ago, in a case out of South Carolina, the justices seemed to be really skeptical of claims that are similar to these. So it's hard to say what kind of luck North Carolina Democrats would have. Laura Leslie, WRAL News, Raleigh.
It truly is murky water. In the meantime, now that these maps have become law, politicians from both parties spent today announcing what they're going to do or what they aren't going to do in terms of running next year and where they will run. But a lawsuit, keep in mind, could put these new maps on hold, throwing all of those new plans into disarray. You can read more about who's in and who's out at WRAL.com. Just click on NC Capitol.
I'm Mark Boyle in the WREL Live Center. New tonight at 7 o'clock as we look over southern Israel here, where the conflict between Israel and Hamas continues. There are local family members with family members in Gaza being held hostage by Hamas, and we're learning more about them on your screen. This is what we just have been able to confirm here. A Chapel Hill native and his wife are among those captured, according to their close friends. This evening, we're speaking with a rabbi about how this conflict has strong ties to the triangle. We're also hearing and speaking with a Raleigh man who says nine of his family members were killed in the blast in Gaza. You might recall yesterday, we broke the news at 5:30. Ted Budd announced he spoke with family members from North Carolina that have others that they know being held hostage right now. About 200 people currently being held hostage in Gaza tonight. Back to you.
The sheer anguish these families must be hearing. Thank you, thanks, Mark. The Pentagon says it is sending Patriot missiles to the Middle East because of attacks on U.S. forces in Iraq and Syria. Some of those missiles will come from Fort Liberty. WRAL's Gilbert Bays explains why the air defense artillery units are being deployed quickly.
Well, we know when the president dials 911, that phone call is answered here at Fort Liberty. Right now, they're asking for Patriot missiles to protect our soldiers from attacks in Iraq and Syria.
This is what's headed to the Middle East from several army posts in the United States. During a press conference, the Pentagon says it's sending Patriot and Avenger missile systems from Fort Liberty and Fort Sill in Oklahoma. We're told in addition to the missiles, 900 troops are also being sent to the region in response to more than a dozen attacks on U.S. forces last week in Iraq and Syria.
While I won't talk specific deployment locations for these forces, I can confirm that they are not going to Israel and that, again, they are intended to support regional deterrence efforts and further bolster U.S. force protection capabilities.
The Patriot missile system has been around since the late 1970s, but Fort Liberty didn't get theirs until 2006. It was first used in combat during the first Gulf War. The Patriot is the Army's most advanced air defense system, capable of defending both high-performance aircraft and tactical ballistic missiles. It's the only operational air defense system that can shoot down attacking missiles. This mission to the Middle East was just announced by the Pentagon a few days ago, but it's something that Fort Liberty soldiers train for every day.
That's correct. We are America's Contingency Corps, the 18th Airborne Corps here. at Fort Liberty, and we are always on call. Anytime the nation calls, we are ready to deploy at a moment's notice.
So we know our soldiers from Fort Liberty are headed to the Middle East. The big question, how long will they be gone? And that's always the toughest part for families left behind. At Fort Liberty, Gilbert Bays, WREL News.
So the state says it can no longer help people pay for their weight loss drugs, drugs like Ozempic and Wegovy. The state board's its new plan, its trustees decided to put a moratorium on new users starting January 1st. WRL's Destiny Patterson is in Raleigh, where the Board of Trustees debated this topic.
The original recommendation was to stop covering drugs like Ozempic and Wegovy for weight loss, period. But the board decided that they needed more information before taking such a big step. Instead, they decided that they'll stop covering new users for weight loss starting at the first of the year until they come up with a more concrete plan. These drugs were originally meant to help people with diabetes regulate their blood sugar, but they've quickly grown in popularity for their strong results in weight loss.
I lost almost, 40 pounds in that first year.
Dr. C. Nicole Swiner's testimony is not an outlier. She says semaglutide has helped her lead a healthier lifestyle. It mimics that full feeling and slows digestion.
I had a weight loss coach, had been on Weight Watchers.
This was the tool she needed to finally see results. But something that can't be overlooked, the hefty price tag.
Looking at anywhere from $1,000 to $1,300 per month.
More than 20,000 North Carolina plan members take the drug. That's a 731% increase compared to 3 years ago. With that, the state went from shelling out $3 million a month to $14 million a month. Those numbers have the state clenching its wallet.
We're not questioning the efficacy of this drug. What I'm questioning is the price.
Many argue that weight is a crucial factor of overall health.
As we age, the BMI and our weight becomes more and more important for long-term chronic health risks.
People with diabetes will still be covered under that plan. They say that over in Europe, this drug is just a couple hundred dollars and they're being overcharged here in the United States. So all of this back and forth is meant to cut costs for the state health plan. Destiny Patterson, WREL News, Raleigh.
So it's been, the news has been pretty heavy recently. We've been hearing terms like mass shooting and mass murder. We hear it frequently in newscasts.
Coming up, we will explain why we use different terms and how frequent mass murders actually are in the U.S. Kat?
And temperatures keep climbing until we see a drastic change next week. I'm tracking the arrival of this much colder air originating from Canada coming up.
As we've been reporting on the grim situations in both Sampson County and in Maine, you may have some questions about why we, as a news organization, use one particular term to describe the killing somewhere while avoiding it in another. WREL investigative data journalist Allie Ingersoll explains the definition of mass murder and looks at the statistics of that crime in the U.S.
We report on violence across our region, state, and country far too often, and that might make it seem like it's pretty common. But in reality, it isn't. Both of the incidents we've been talking about today, the five people killed in Sampson County and at least 18 in Maine, are defined as mass murders. Now, these are different than mass shootings, so we wanted to take some time and look into this and explain it to you. According to the Gun Violence Archive, a mass shooting is when at least four victims, not including the shooter, are shot and they're either injured or they're killed. So far this year, there have been 566 of those. That's about two every single day around the country. Only about 5% of mass shootings are mass murder, so they're far less common. The FBI defines these as four or more victims killed in a single incident, not including the shooter. There have been 32 mass murders so far this year, and that's fewer than one a week. So the fact that we had two of these within 24 hours is really rare. The data is showing that we're seeing these happen more often, though. I analyzed the Gun Violence Archive database, looking between between January 1st and October 26th for every year over the last decade. There's been a steady increase over the last few years, with 2020 being the outlier given the pandemic. And since 2013, the number of mass murders in the country have almost doubled. Here in our state, we have had 8 mass murders in the last 10 years, which have resulted in 36 people dying. For WREL News, I'm Allie Ingersoll.
These are all important things we unfortunately need to understand together as we navigate these tragedies. Let's lighten things up just a little bit. There's some really great stuff to talk about as well. The Doors, for instance, opening in just a few minutes at Reynolds Coliseum in Raleigh for Prime Time with the Pack. Our Casey Hintz joins us live right now for a chat with the coach. Hey, Casey.
They're gonna start the music as soon as you're ready to enter.
Hey guys, welcome in. Tonight is Prime Time with the Pack. It is a fun night. We've got a chance to meet both the men's and women's teams. The women's team's bringing in 8 new faces, while the men have 7 faces coming in. But you know what? Tonight is all about the guys having fun. And joining me now is head coach Kevin Keith. Coach, we were just talking. This is the first time that we've had a Prime Time with the Pack since before the pandemic. How excited are these guys just to get out here and have some fun?
Well, it's always a great event. Our guys are really excited about being here. It's the first time really that our fans, our students get a chance to meet our players. And we've got 7 transfers and 1 freshman. So everybody's excited about tonight.
Well, I know that fans are also excited to probably see the personality of some of these players. You already told me there's going to be no dancing because not a lot of coordination. But what can we expect from the guys tonight?
So we got no dancers, but we do got a few guys that are going to be in a dunk contest. I know they're excited about it. My pick tonight to win the dunk contest is Dennis Parker Jr., the freshman.
All righty. We'll be excited to look for him. Coach, we know things are getting ready to get started. We'll let you go get the guys. Thank you much for joining us. We've got Prime Time with the Pack tonight. You'll see highlights of it. Hopefully that dunk contest winner coming up tonight with Chris Lee at 10 and 11. We'll send it back to you guys.
Everybody loves a good dunk contest, Casey. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon.
We've got to talk about Halloween and the temperature drop that we're going to experience just in time for trick-or-treating. Kat Campbell joining us with all of that.
And, you know, the temperature drop, it is going to be arriving just in time for the trick-or-treaters. So make sure that they've got the extra layer with them. Here's our latest thoughts in terms of temperatures for trick-or-treating. 5 o'clock, we're at 57 degrees. By 7 o'clock, 52. And by 9 o'clock, around 50. I will say, notice, there is that 20% chance for rain. We do have a small chance of a quick shower moving through still. The European model continues to indicate that there could be some rain that passes through. It doesn't look very heavy. It doesn't look like it's going to last a very long time, though, and that's our good news. So let's talk about the weekend as a whole. We're looking at 83 for the high on Friday, 86 on Saturday, and we've bumped up the high Sunday as well, 86 degrees on Sunday. It is bright, it is sunny this weekend, and there is no rain in the forecast that you would have to worry about. So let's talk about what drives temperatures up and then right back down again. It's all due to the jet stream and the cold front. What we have happening right now, jet stream's lifting to the north in Canada. We've got this big ridge of high pressure building in. But the jet stream kind of acts like a wave. It's the way to balance the atmosphere. So where it goes up, it must also come down. And that's what we're going to see happen across the northwest as we see much cooler air move in by the end of the week and into the weekend. We stay under that ridge of high pressure through the weekend, but the cold air will arrive and the jet stream will dive to the south by early next week. So let's talk about the arrival of the chill. 36 is the high temperature in Winnipeg, 20s elsewhere for the high on Saturday. We're starting to see some of that cooler air moving into Denver, Sioux Falls, but we'll really see that chill arrive once we get to the end of the weekend in the Midwest. And then for us along the East Coast, the chill arrives by the middle of next week. And that's right in time for Halloween here in Raleigh. Tuesday's high only 59 degrees, but look to the Northwest, Minneapolis, the high on Halloween only 35. So imagine dressing your kids for the costumes if you got a trick-or-treat in that kind of weather. Just 40 for the high in Chicago, 52 in New York City. Outside tonight, it is warm, it is mild and beautiful. Just a great night to be out and about in Clayton. They have a lot going on tonight. You can see, looks like the state fair is back, just on a little bit of a smaller scale there in Clayton tonight. A beautiful evening. Tomorrow, if you're headed out and about, you'll wake up to temperatures in the mid to upper 50s, 58 by 8 a.m., 78 by noon. A great day to eat lunch outside. Get some fresh air tomorrow, especially if you're a fan of the warm weather. 83 is the high tomorrow afternoon. 83 tomorrow, and then we just keep climbing. Mid-80s this weekend. We'd tie the record on Saturday and break the record on Sunday. One more warm day on Monday before temperatures come crashing down on Halloween. We have that small chance for rain and then drier by the middle and end of next week. But it looks like we'll see some frost next Thursday, down to 34 degrees. Okay. Everything from 86 to 34.
It was beautiful being outside today. Felt sure like summer. Thanks, Kat. The Blue Ridge Parkway in Western North Carolina, always beautiful.
When will it peak? When is the best time to go? Coming up, we'll tell you about the late season treat for fans of these brilliant fall colors. Just spectacular, honestly. I don't want to exaggerate. You probably will agree. It's the most gorgeous foliage that you can find in Western North Carolina right now. I mean, just look at some of these images. Eye-popping video from our state's gorgeous Blue Ridge Parkway. That's a fun drive, isn't it? The red, orange, the yellow, the leaves mixing in with some of the green that's still remaining there. The visitors we were talking to just love it. Listen here.
I don't have words for it. If I did, I'd be a genius. I would describe it. I think this is a great year. This is a great year.
And there is some good news here, more of it. It's not too late to go see this in person. Experts say this year's colors have been delayed a bit, and the vibrant season is still expected for the upstate for the first or second week of November.
Truly stunning. Artsplosure doesn't return to downtown Raleigh until May of next year, but it's not too soon for area artists to start thinking about the spring. It's time to apply to exhibit your work in next year's festival. During the festival, a three-judge panel will award six cash prizes totaling $3,500. All artists exhibit on the main street. There will also be free parking, booth sitters, and artist hospitality. Deadline to apply is February 12th. Learn more at artsplosure.org.
I love checking out or even picking up some local art. Mm-hmm. You know, the people right here in the community can see a lot of like North Carolina-inspired stuff.
And ceramics, too.
Really beautiful. Fantastic. Thanks so much for being with us tonight here on WRAL News.
Our next newscast is at 10 on Fox 50 and 11 on WRAL. Have a great night.
Keep watching WRAL News over the air channel 34 and Spectrum channel 1257.